what I thought we would do is carry on with our kind of, we've had words, this is the wisdom section. So in other words, what I want us to think about is our leadership. And look, the truth is we're going to go over some stuff that you guys will have thought through before. It may well be you think, oh, come on, this is bread and butter. This, you know, Perks, what are you doing? You know, grandmother, eggs suck, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to remind you of some things that we quickly forget, not least because of where we are in a year's program for those of us this side of the world, with the possibility of relaunching and reopening churches, and perhaps also with the impending start of a new church year in September. So I want us to think a little bit about planning in particular. There's a handout that should be helpful. Let me pray. Father, please give us wisdom. Give us your wisdom. Help us to be those that lead our congregations, our launch teams, ourselves, our families well, particularly in the area of planning, that we might be intentional rather than accidental, that we might be a bit more proactive than reactive, knowing that you're the one who guides our steps, but nevertheless, you require us to make sensible decisions about the way forward. So help us, we pray, to become better at that, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen. When we planted Christchurch Ballon, we did so without having a clue about the existence of things like vision, strategy, mission, values, and so on. To be honest, I think there was one person in the launch team who would have known what they meant. And that was because he was a management consultant. And no doubt he was pulling his hair out at times. But the rest of us were just gloriously oblivious to their reality. And yet, I don't think it mattered. Because, particularly through Christian's influence, who is the management consultant, we made decisions about what we wanted to do and how we would plan to do it. And then what we need to get that done, without ever using labels. The point is, we actually worked hard to be clear, so we all knew what was what. We didn't use the business labels. Now, in hindsight, I think labels might have helped. They would have given us categories to put things under. But I think it's worth saying also, the use of those kind of business labels may make some people especially suspicious. Only recently, one pastor reckoned there's a danger in creating a decision-making culture in our churches that owes more to business practice and less to the Bible. And I want to take that observation seriously, because we don't want to be less than biblical in what we do. Now, the names or labels that are sometimes used are simply ways to think about and to break down the overall objective of, say, a church planting proposal. You know, we want to plant a church is the big thing. You press down into the detail a little bit, you need a little bit more than that, don't you? And I take it, therefore, we're thinking about needing to provide answers to questions like, what are we trying to do? Secondly, what do we need to make what we're trying to do happen? Thirdly, what do we need to do to make this happen with what we need? Fourthly, what are we then going to need to do to make this happen? Now, look, we'll think a little bit more about that in a moment. But people on our launch teams, if that's the stage that we're at, need clarity. And we need clarity. We need to be clear about what it is we're trying to do, what we need to make that happen, and what we're going to do to make that happen. Now, sometimes labels can help you with that, as long as everyone knows what they mean. But I am not wanting to provide a defense of labels. It is a defense of clarity. So let's think about what we need to be clear on. And I think there are three things that we need to be clear on. Call them whatever you like, Tom, Dick or Harry, I don't care. Number one, we need to be clear on our idea of the future. Secondly, we need to be clear on our plan for success. And thirdly, we need to be clear on our in-play principles. Let me explain those briefly in turn. First of all, but we need to be clear on our idea of the future. And we're answering questions like, what is the thing that we want to bring into existence? What does success in our particular endeavor look like? What does the preferred future look like? So we need to have a clear idea of where we want to go and, of course, what it will look like when we get there. Now, this is sometimes known as vision. It's sometimes known as mission. I don't really mind. The point is, it's just where you want to get to. And therefore, you need to be really clear on your desired destination. Again, that can be macro or it can be micro. In other words, it can be really big picture vision for an entire church plant. Or it could be the vision for the door knocking ministry. So in other words, there's big picture vision for the entire church plant, but also there'll be small picture vision for, you know, different elements. The point is, in your planning, whatever the planning is, you need to be clear on your idea of the future, what you want to bring into reality, whether that's for the church plant or the children's ministry or, you know, the evangelistic gathering on Zoom. Yeah. OK. Secondly, we need to be clear on our plan for success. So we're answering questions like, what do you think you need to do to bring the future into the present? What has to happen to get to that preferred future? How will you get from where you are to where you want to be? Those kinds of questions. So we need to have a clear idea of the route we're going to take to get to our desired destination, which slightly changes the metaphor somewhat. This is the plan. Just a plan. Now, look, it's sometimes called strategy, often just to intimidate those of us who are from a business background. The business writer Patrick Lencioni says this, planning or strategy, it's nothing more than the collection of intentional decisions a company, or for our purposes, of course, an organization, a church, makes to give itself the best chance to thrive and differentiate from competitors. We have an issue with that. But what it goes on to say is that means every single decision, if it is made intentionally and consistently, will be part of the overall strategy. In other words, all we're talking about at this stage in our kind of our plan for success is, what are we going to achieve? What are we going to do to achieve our goal? What is the plan for success? Thirdly, we need to be clear on our in-play principles. And at this stage, I think we're answering questions like this. What's allowed or permissible play and what's out of bounds? It's the kind of the rules of the game. How do we know which decisions can we make? What are the things that we want to keep on doing? We spoke last week about the danger of untethered pragmatism. And we spoke about our preference for a principled pragmatism, not just merely doing what works, but doing what's right. And distinguishing that from thinking that what's right is what works. We want a theologically informed concern to get the right stuff done. And I think that's what we're talking about here. Lencioni calls the kinds of things we're talking about here strategic anchors. And he's talking, I think, about three or four boundary markers. In my head, it's a little bit like, I don't know whether you've ever played the game Operation. You know, you're trying to be a surgeon, you've got the little tweezers and you have to pick up the bones from various things. And if you go wrong and you hit the outside, that means you've got an unsteady hand and the bell goes off. And I think what we're talking about here is the strategic anchors hold us in place, or rather a little bit, I guess, like a conscience for a church, where when we stray, you get the zzz and it goes off. Now, if you wanted to follow this up, there's a brief section in Wisdom in Leadership about reverse engineering your strategic anchors. In other words, Hamilton there assumes you're already in play. It's already working. You're doing church, you're up and running, and you're trying to work out, okay, how do we get here? Why are we doing these things? And he talks about writing down absolutely everything that you do and trying to group them together and try to identify the key things for you. I'm not entirely sure he's talking about values here, but it's not far off. But I did that, for example, for what we're doing at the moment at Bridge Church Peckham. And look, it's not a long list. So I just started, there you can see the list. So I draw everything down and draw some conclusions from that. And I came away thinking, do you know what? The three things that really matter to us, number one, helping everyone grasp the gospel. Secondly, everyone needs training to live the Christian life. Thirdly, relationships are critical to congregational health. Those are just the three things. Now, I don't think those were conscious decisions beforehand, but they're just observable. But in one sense, those three things summarize or provide the grid through which all decisions must pass if they're going to be strategic for us, if they're going to be part of our plan for success. So if a decision ticks all three boxes, helps someone understand the gospel, it's training people to live the Christian life, and it is providing the critical relationships for congregational health, then of course that it's in play. I guess if it fails in one of those areas, then it may well not be in play. Now, that I think that final section is the in one sense the hardest, but in one sense it's helping you work out in our plan for success, how are we going to make sure that we haven't just pursued an untethered pragmatism, but that it is sort of biblically located with strategic anchors that make sure that we're doing the right things in the right way for the right reasons as we pursue this desired destination. Now, one of the things that Hamilton goes on to talk about is with planning to pursue three-level clarity. I put a little a table in the notes to try to get you to grasp what I think he's on about. And this is a slightly different tweak, but really what it's saying, he's asking the question, how? So the key to planning, isn't it, is to push down into how, is to keep asking the how question. So how are you going to do that? Okay, very well. Okay, so about how are you going to do that? Okay, but how are you going to do that? And the more detailed and specific, the further you push the how question. But he's very helpful, and he talks about there being three layers. And in one sense, it's the time thing. So it's what's the far future? What's the kind of intermediate thing? And what's the immediate thing that we need to be doing? So his first thing is to talk, in one sense, about the ultimate end, the end goal towards which you're working. And we've talked about this before. This is the first of the three things. It could be something like, look, to take Bridge Church Peckham's, building a church of such cultural diversity that it can only be explained by the gospel. That could be the end goal to which you're working. Or it could be, for example, for Thomas and Daniel at the moment, a year-long lease on a church building for us to meet in. That could be their kind of their end goal. That's the end goal. The kind of the intermediate decision or the next layer is closer to the present, and it describes the types of things we'll need to do to get us to that future. It's more specific than the end goal, but it doesn't involve any specific decisions. So for example, if our end goal is, look, building a church of such cultural diversity that can only be explained by the gospel, then this next layer is the broad plan of how we're going to get there. And so something like, we're going to recruit a suitably qualified fellow leader from an ethnic minority, a minority ethnic background. That would be the next layer of planning. Now, that is, it's not a specific decision. It's the sort of the broad, it's the plan for success, I think. And then thirdly, the final layer is that it's kind of the specific decisions and the practicalities. And this is what you end up with once you've got the strategic anchors in place. It is this layer is the most immediate, most concrete. It's the most in your face. It's right. This is what we're going to be doing. And so it's going to be something like, okay, if we want to build a church of such cultural diversity, it can only be explained by the gospel. And the key way to do that is to recruit someone from a minority ethnic background to leadership who's suitably qualified. Okay, very well. How are you going to do that? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk to the heads of theological colleges, the London director of the FIC, the CEO of London City Mission, the director of the Cornhill Training Course. Now, can you see those are specific decisions, they're practicalities. And at that point, it's the to-do list, and it may well be that it gets allocated. But in each of those, it's going to be me getting hold of various people, ticking them off, and just pursuing things. Now, look, in one sense, I think this is all stuff that you already know, to be sure. But I do think it's helpful to be reminded, not least because I think the season you guys are about to move into is a season in which you're planning for relaunch. You're certainly going to shift away from the kind of sort of virtual gathering to an in-person gathering. It may well be that you shift from a sort of constrained in-person gathering to the unfettered, joyful gathering of the saints once again, where we sing and we hug and we share food and we enjoy being in each other's presence once again. And you guys are going to have to do some planning. And so it may well be that those kinds of things are quite helpful. And I think that table might be helpful because it provides clarity. What are we trying to do? What's our plan to get there? And then what are the immediate next steps? You may have your own way of doing it, but that's meant to be helpful. Comments, queries, questions at this point. Oh, great planners amongst us.
I think it's helpful. Like, I think just reflecting on it means, you know, I find it easier to sort of make decisions. I actually quite like making decisions, you know, just in terms of this is what needs to be done. Let's get in touch with this person. Let's do that. Even within meetings, I think easy wins where you tick things off and you say, yeah, we've made a decision on that. Let's move forward with that. I think the bit this is challenging me on is the ultimate aim.
Yeah.
Because you can do a lot of the planning kind of, and you get quite good, I think, as church planters at just doing the planning quickly.
Yeah.
And therefore you tackle smaller things, which you can do that for, but you don't necessarily tackle the wider kind of aims and the vision of the of why you're doing those smaller things.
So I'll sometimes talk about you can plan to church plant like Dunkirk, or you can plan to church plant like D-Day. And those are two different types of planning. In other words, Dunkirk is, let's get these guys off the beach. Let's just get them home. You know, it's what do we do with what we've got? And the limiting factor is, what have we got? And what are we going to do with what we've got? And that's Dunkirk. And sometimes you need that in leadership. It's just get the guys off the beach. The harder planning, I think, is the D-Day planning. And it's the deliberate, intentional, long-term, this is what we're trying to do. And it asks the question, not what do we do with what we've got, but what have we got to get to do what we want to do? And that's the harder thing. And I often, with church planting, it's the guys who work out what they need to get and then get it, or get others to get it, that can actually advance the plan. Otherwise, we spend all our time bemoaning our lack of resources.
I totally agree with what Rob was saying, and I identify with it. You know, most of us that want to plant churches are doers by nature. And so actually we would rather just get things done. So your example was, let's just do 10 interviews and find the right guy, you know, with the ethnic background. But actually, the much harder work for someone like me is to go, well, what are we trying to do with that? And so actually you've touched on something really interesting, that far future idea, you know, with me not even planted yet, it's kind of, I don't know what it's going to look like. I think I kind of have some idea, but actually the immediate future is more appealing because I can actually I can put into it and see results. And being a results-driven person, that appeals to me. The far future planning is kind of a little bit in the ethos, you know, you don't really know what it's going to do, but it's, I think what you've touched on is how important it is to make sure you know where you're trying to get to so that you can then ask those how questions. It's a bit like an onion skin.
Yeah.
You get into the center of it and then you realize actually you need that big picture vision in order to do the little small actions.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Rick? I think, Perks, you've said something on, just with like, let's face it, right? We're limited in our resources when we're starting out, and I think you know when you're just trying to work out, okay, how am I going to grow this? This is what I need to do. You know, practically that needs money, finance, and so you've got to, in order to do that, you've got to set. You know, I think the default thing is, well, we don't have the resources and the money, so let's just not do it.
Yeah.
But actually, you've got to say, no, you know, it's there. We need to raise the bar. We need to try and find how we're going to get the money so that we can hire this member of staff or whatnot. Otherwise, you'll always just, because you'll never have enough. Well, then we can't do it.
Yeah. And just to be clear, Rick, you're not saying the reason our church plants don't grow is insufficient money. You're not putting all that. You're not putting it all down on that, are you?
No. So what I'm saying is, you know, your second bit about D-Day when you said, you know, what do we need?
Yeah.
What's the next step? We don't have all the resources, but we need to think about what do we need in order to get there.
And just always distinguish between human resources and financial resources, and don't assume they're the same thing. In other words, you can get human resources without financial resources. And, you know, that is critical. So I'm nervous. I agree funding matters, but people matter more because people have got abilities, gifts, opportunities, friendships, and so on and so forth. But yeah, Matt, you're going to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, one thing that's hard, makes this process harder than it looks on paper here, is just involving others in the decisions that you're making. So some of these decisions you need to just tell people as an individual planter or as a leadership, like, if you're buying into this church, this is what you're buying into. But like we were talking about last week, getting other people to have the ideas, especially at the level of the, you know, the immediate next steps, or the, you know, if you're saying I personally really want people to buy into after school clubs for kids and mums and tots groups much more than, I think that's more likely to win as an evangelistic strategy than door knocking. But you've got to get the church needs to buy in and own that decision. You can't just tell people that's the decision, or it just all that's what makes this complicated, isn't it? And just wisdom on which decisions you need to tell people, this is where we're going, and which, you know, this is island A, not island B, and when you need to say, hey guys, how do you think we should get to island A? I don't know, you know, which ones we want, what strategies do we want to use?
But even that itself, even that decision lends itself to three-layer planning. Because in one sense, if your preferred future is Grace Church Beckenham has a whole load of, you know, mums and toddlers groups, you've got to ask yourself, how do I get there? What's your plan to get people there? That's your intermediate thing. And that's, you know, that you've got to have an answer to that. How are you going to persuade people that that's the case? Or how are you going to... And then, okay, what's next? So in other words, you've got to win that argument. You've got to win people's hearts. Now, how are you going to do that? What's your plan for success? If you think that's the way to go, how are you going to do that? That's the answer you've got to have, that you've got to come up with. And then the, okay, what's next? And, you know.
Sorry, I probably could have been a bit more nuanced for Rob on door knocking. Like, I do genuinely believe in the value of door knocking. Yeah. It's just, if you can only do one, which one do you do?
Absolutely. The vision stuff, I think, just a thought on that, because I think the enemy we're fighting against in some ways is that we're more and more so is that people lose interest, don't they? Because of the instant kind of information culture, media culture, kind of, it's really hard to hold people's interest. And I think with the using your vision as an opportunity to get people on board with it, I wonder whether the short term, we tend to lean towards the short term. So we're going to plant a church,
yeah,
and to get people excited about that. But the problem with that is that as soon as that happens, everyone thinks, right, it's done. You know, that church has been planted. I don't need to really read their prayer requests anymore. I don't need to send my money anymore because the church has been planted. And I think the harder thing, I think, would be to sell people a 20-year, 50-year vision. Because actually church growth is a slow process in the UK at the moment, I think. But otherwise people just forget that you exist.
Yeah. We've done some stuff on vision before, haven't we? And I think it's got to be, in one sense, it's got to err on the side of being unrealistic to capture the heart. And, you know, everyone knows it is, but you just think, do you know what? Church planters are dreamers as well. People do want to commit themselves to something that is big and valuable and exciting and worthwhile. And wouldn't it be amazing if that really did come into reality? It's the kind of thing that excites us and makes us pray. You want something I remember Chris Green at college talking about big, hairy, audacious goals. It's that, isn't it? Well, you know, whether you call it a goal or a vision, but it's that kind of, wow, that is big. You know, it is hairy, it is audacious, you know, and it's great. And who wouldn't want to commit to that? And I think it's, you know, for you in Becontree, it's keeping that. We're not done yet. This is where we're going. And it's wearying. And you will get fed up of the sound of your own voice. But at that point, people are only just beginning to listen. But it's you know, it's the holiday, isn't it? It's use the holiday illustration. It's, you know, where, you know, we are going to go to the Seychelles in 5 years' time as a family holiday. I mean, tell me that, you know, when your three kids are old enough to know where the Seychelles is and what it looks like, they'll be all over it. Okay, to do that, you're going to have limited pocket money, and mummy and daddy are going to have to, you know, we're going to have to cut down the gin consumption. So every time they see Hannah reaching for the gin, it's going to be, mummy, no, you can't have that because otherwise we won't go to the Seychelles. So there's that kind of, you know, it's the kind of the big goal that everyone says, yeah, that'd be amazing, drives the decisions in the short term.